Another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
You're listening to Free With This Month's Issue. As always, please support the bands and artists featured in each episode by buying their records and going to their gigs. Each episode we'll be adding all available tracks to our ongoing Spotify playlist, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also find our other episodes and podcasts there. If you want to agree with us, or more likely argue with us, or even appear in a future episode, you can find us on Twitter at This Month's Issue and Facebook at Free With This Month's Issue. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, then let people know. Like, subscribe, review it on iTunes, tattoo it on your forehead, etc. Right, let's get on with it then.
Hello, welcome to Free With This Month Issue, the podcast where we play and discuss the songs that you used to get free, stuck on magazines with that weird, sticky, transparent snot glue.
Indeed.
On this week's episode, we have Jade.
We have. Hello, Jade.
Hello.
And it's a first, isn't it? We're talking about Rock Sound.
We are.
Which was, in fact, my favourite music magazine.
Really? I didn't know it was anyone's favourite.
Yeah. Rock Sound got me into fucking loads of stuff.
Yeah.
The CDs were great.
Yeah.
The magazine... I mean, I'm going on a sample size of one, because this is the only Rock Sound magazine I've read in the last 20 years.
All right, so no, the early Rock Sounds were absolute dog shit, but towards the end, they were actually getting to be a pretty passable music
magazine. Right. At this point, not so much. So, yeah, Jade, which one have we got? What CD have you brought for us?
Oh, it's from March 2000.
Yes.
Rock Sound.
Music with Attitude 10.
With 10, yes. Sorry, I did forget the number.
To be fair, they're all called Music with Attitude, and then they just a different number.
And so, they're just a number, yeah. It was just one of those.
I mean, there was a point where they just became Mwah, which I was not a fan of.
Mwah. It's a bit kissy, that, isn't it?
It is,
Mwah.
Right.
But they never had Kiss on there, as far as I'm aware.
No, I don't think Rock Sound ever had a big enough budget for Kiss.
No. Rock Sound, it was an interesting magazine, particularly at first, because it was really diverse in, you know, the first issue, the CD had got Stereophonics on it and a load of metal stuff. So they'd got indie bollocks.
Yeah.
They've got terrible. Some good indie stuff as well, but it was all mixed in. In the review section, you've got stuff like Dark Wave. There's a section for Dark Wave and a section for, like, lo-fi and stuff like that.
That's it. Like, it supported my, at that point in time, cravings for, like, industrial goth stuff.
Yeah.
And slowly weaned me onto the wonders of post-rock.
Yes, it's the only magazine that I ever bought that had Apoptima Berserk on a CD.
That is Berserk.
Eh.
Like, I read Berjork.
It. So, yeah, Jag, what was your sort of general magazine habit? Did you get Rock Sound every month? Or?
Yeah, I would buy Rock Sound because essentially I didn't have enough money to buy CDs. So I would get a free, like, 10, 12 track CD with Rock Sound for, I think it was like £3.50 or something. So it just meant that I got to hear loads
$2.95.
of stuff. £2.95, bargain, absolute bargain.
And it had a CD every issue.
And
it had
a CD every issue. And so the people that I was, I guess it's a bit like how streaming works now. So you go on, you have a quick listen to see if you like it. And then if you do like it, then you go out and you buy the album, theoretically. And so that was that way of doing that. It was just like, I'd hear it and I'd be like, oh, actually, no, I do like that. And then I'd go out and buy the album. But for me, it was a total, like, cost thing. Just, we'll do it. But Rock Sound was great because it did have a lot of the people on that I liked.
Yeah.
So it meant that there was a good bet that the rest of the people on there I'd at least be interested in, if not love. So.
Did you get it from, like, the first issue, or because this was only issue 10? So.
No, I think I did. Like, I think I got it right from the first one. I can't even remember who was on the front of it now. But as soon as I saw it, I was just like, that's dead cheap. It's got a free CD on it. I'll buy it.
I think the CD had got a pair of Doc Martens on the front.
Yes.
And they've got random things like an electric fan on the front.
Possibly, definitely. So I had several of them and just went with the one that I probably still had the most memory of in terms of actually listening to. It isn't the one that I listened to the most, but...
Well, we could do that for a future episode then.
If you wish.
So, this was, as we said before, March 2000. Yep. So it came out in February 2000, the issue did.
Yeah.
Rocksound had had a bit of a break for a few months, which the editorial bit blames on the Millennium bug. But reading between the lines, it looks like most of the staff left and were replaced by different people.
That explains it, because honestly, earlier issues were fucking terrible.
Really bad, really bad.
This one's pretty bad. Going through and reading the like level of writing standard, there's so many mistakes in it. The sub-editor was Stacey Mann. If I was her, I wouldn't have put my name on that as a sub-editor. The reviews are really, really inconsistent with the scores,
yeah,
and the writing don't seem to match up. So yeah, I'm going to read you a review. They're all scored out of 5.
Okay.
So let me know what you think the score of this review was.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a various artists album called At Home with the Groovebox, which I used to have. Not the usual sort of thing you'd expect from Grand Royal, which was the Beastie Boys record label.
Right.
Take 14 artists of varying degrees of popularity, add one groovebox, a compact programmable synthesizer, retire and await the results. Simple, right? Wrong. This compilation is the biggest slice of cheese since the 1976 French World Fromage Fair. Respected artists get the chance to construct a song using only the groovebox, and the results are quite spectacularly disappointing. Sonic Youth's attempt sounds like they didn't even manage to turn the damn thing on, while Biss's effort is entitled, Oh My, My Thoughts Exactly. Air's Planet Vega and Beck's Boys are possibly the only credible tunes on this concept album lacking in concept. Definitely only one for groovebox aficionados. So how many out of 5 do you reckon that has got?
I'm going to say 4, considering that you built it up to be...
Yeah.
Yep, that got 4 out of 5.
Yeah, yeah.
It clearly wasn't written as a 4 out of 5 review.
No, it was written as like a 1 or 2.
And so
also the fact that they called it a concept album without a concept, yet the concept was
the concept, yeah,
everything is on Groovebox.
Yeah.
Clearly has
it's
a concept.
Quite clear, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be fair, it was a shit album. I've got it and it's rubbish. But
2 stars?
I would say 2 stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, in general. It's like, here's some equipment that you've not learned how to use. You've got a week to come up with a song.
Nice.
And most of the bands couldn't be asked to bother in that time. It's also got a reader's poll in this issue.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Where you've got the best British newcomer is Muse.
Yeah, yeah. Would have been about that time, wouldn't
best,
it?
Best international newcomer is Slipknot. The best British band is Bush. and
can you imagine a time when Bush would have been a best British band for anything, for anyone?
Well, they're
it's weird, right?
Also in the top 10, so they've beaten Feeder, Pitch Shifter, if they've spelt wrong, Radiohead, Placebo, Cradle of Filth.
They beat Radiohead.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Stereophonics, Manic Street Preacher, Skunk Anansie, and Terrorvision.
And obviously, Pitch Shifter at that point in time, no matter how they were spelled, were better than.
Yeah, and they got number 3, though, which is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
For a. I mean, they've never been a massively well known band. They've never played anywhere bigger than Rock City, I don't think.
No, no.
As headliners, anyway.
Does that kind of... I don't know. I always think a lot of girls read this magazine. Is that a bit of a reflection of the fact that I think they had quite a high female readership? I don't know if that's true or not.
I think you could be right, to be honest.
I don't ever remember seeing any lads reading or buying it. And
well,
so
me.
I don't know.
But, but you didn't know me then.
Me
no,
as well.
No, I did not. But, like, I don't know. I don't know whether... Gabby Mossdale's beautiful flowing locks maybe kind of swayed it a little bit.
Maybe.
In some respect. I don't know.
I bet they went down in the ratings when him and Gwen split up, though.
But would they have been together then?
Yeah, about that sort of time.
Because Tragic Kingdom was like 3 years
yeah, it was. That
before.
Was
97, wasn't it?
I don't know when they split up.
I don't know when they split up. They only split up relatively recently, didn't they?
Yeah,
him,
this is true.
Him and Gavin Mossdale. But I don't know when they got together.
Yeah. There's also the best bit of the magazine. It's a terrible article about Smashing Pumpkins where they clearly couldn't get an interview with Billy Corgan. So they just wrote an A to Z of Smashing Pumpkins. But it's completely made worth its while by... There is an amazing revelation from Courtney Love in there who claims that Billy Corgan, when working on Celebrity Skin with them, frittered away all his money on fireworks and scampi.
Wow.
Scampi.
Which I didn't even know they had that in America.
No.
But yeah, Rock Sound also doesn't understand posters. There yeah. are six posters in the middle of the magazine.
Yes.
Only one of them on one piece of paper. The rest are all split between two pages, so wouldn't work as posters.
Yeah, yeah, I do remember that, that being quite an annoyance, I think, at the time.
Yes. You know, you were fine if you wanted the Rage Against the Machine poster.
Yeah.
But the Blink 182 one, you'd have to sellotape together.
Or, yeah.
I mean, that's fine, like, rip that's it apart, fine, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, because you shouldn't want the Blink 182
yeah.
poster.
Go choose Rage Against the Machine always over Blink 182. So, outside of this particular magazine, in the music world at the time, so February 2000, the UK number one single was Pure Shores by All Saints. The album was Rise by Gabrielle, which is fucking boring.
Jeez.
Albums released in that month, Suicide Pact You First by Therapy.
Which is great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Blood Flowers by The Cure.
Mm-hmm.
Machina, The Machines of God by Smashing Pumpkins, and Stiff Upper Lip by AC/DC. Music news, Carlos Santana inexplicably wins a record 8 Grammys, tying with Michael Jackson, who won 8 in 1984.
Was that for his album that got all of those...
Smooth Boy,
with
Rob Thomas
colours.
And all that lot. Yeah. Supernatural, yeah. I think it was called.
See, I've never heard a track on it that wasn't smooth, and I wish I'd heard every track off it that... Wasn't smooth.
Yeah, one of my parents had that album. Probably my dad, because he's a bit of a guitar type person. But
yeah.
I don't think you did need to hear any of the other tracks.
No.
I think you probably see.
It's yeah, it's not a classic. It's not stood the test
just
of time. I don't
fucking hate Rob Thomas.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Still,
on tour, Beck, Bush, Darkstar, who were fucking amazing. Muse playing tiny venues.
So I saw that Muse tour. Saw them at the Princess Charlotte in Leicester.
I used to have a t-shirt from that tour that I bought at Reading that year.
Yes, I saw that tour.
Awesome.
They were dreadful.
Really?
Yeah. So actually I found a little article about that tour online. And what it said was that they come on an hour late because the support band had ran over. And I think in that hour... they must have downed every bottle of alcohol they could find.
Oh dear.
And this, I don't know how, like, this is libelous or whatever, that's writing, isn't it? But,
about it. If it actually
but I'm
happened.
Pretty sure that they were absolutely smashed when they got onto the stage. And I've said to most
that.
People that was one of the worst gigs, certainly that I saw at the Charlotte. Probably one of the worst gigs I ever saw. And to be honest, it very much coloured my. I'm not a massive Muse fan now, and I think. Because watching that, it was terrible. And I was
amazing.
Like, I'm not spending my money on those people.
That's fair.
Seems fair. Also, that month on tour were Slipknot doing their first big UK tour. Well, their first UK tour at all.
Yeah.
The notorious Wolverhampton gig.
The Wolverhampton gig, yes.
Which I was at.
I was
at. With Kitty and 1 Minute Silence supporting that we talked about in previous episodes. I think we should probably get along and start playing the CD then.
Okay then. The T-1000's brother.
It was, Filter. Welcome to the Fold, from their title of record album. Filter were the cover stars of this particular issue of Rock Sound.
Yeah, I really don't like his face.
No.
I don't like much about him, to be honest.
No, he comes across as a complete bellend. I remember reading lots of interviews with him on this album cyclist.
Yeah.
Like, why are you such a cock?
Well, yeah. I think there had been some deals done behind the scenes with Rock Sound and Filter, because he's on the cover, they've got a major interview, they've got a track on the CD, and we mentioned the Reader's Poll earlier. There is also the Rock Sound Journalists 50 Albums of the Year.
And this is...
this is
one.
Number one.
No way.
At number two is The Fragile by Nine Inch Nails, which he spends most of the interview slagging off as he's a former member of Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah. that's why I didn't really invest too much time in this album at the time, because it's like, I've heard this and it's pretty weak sauce. And you're saying that you're better than Nine Inch Nails.
He's saying that I think his quote is something like, I mean, have you heard their new album? Which, fuck off, The Fragile's amazing, you bet.
Yeah, he refers to it as The Flaccid or something like that. Okay.
He's just, I don't know. Just look at, so, we can see the picture on the cover.
Yes.
I can see that. And he's just like, it's almost like a slightly messianic pose, isn't it?
Yeah. He's definitely got a God Jesus-y. Complex.
It's just horrible, and his face is quite like ratty as well. Sorry,
and also
this is horrible.
Like,
I feel like
very empty, like he's got vacant eyes.
Yeah.
That said, Richard Patrick being a bell end aside, the track's all right.
That's the thing, like the track's from the album, because Cancer's on this album as well, which is fucking great. And Take a Picture's
on there, yeah.
And but the thing is, like, if you're going to release Take a Picture as a lead single and say anything else is weak.
Yeah.
Like, anyone else's music is weak at this point. Like, come on, this is some sub Foo Fighters bullshit.
I think the other issue as well is that the song is, like, over 7 minutes long. Somewhere in there is a great 4 minute song.
Yeah.
But it's 7 minutes. Like, it just goes on and on. So I've tried listening to this track a few times and never make it to the end. I mean, it's fine. You get to the beginning, you listen to the chorus, and then you're like, oh, and it's still going on. It's still going. And his voice is quite nasally.
You've got the breakdown. There is the breakdown bit where he's saying, "Mommy, give me my medicine."
Yeah, again, creepy.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Creepy. That's
weird.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the unexpected bongos.
Yes. Yeah. There's also unexpected horns right at the end, so if you haven't got all the way through.
Okay. I might just fast forward.
You only notice them on the last note, but they are sort of building up a little bit behind, which is a trick he's nicked from Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
<I didn't know.
laughs> Shall we go for the next track?
Yeah, let's do that.
So this is Stroke and Momentary.
A band who sounded like literally thousands of other bands at that point.
It's very of its time, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't hate it, though.
No,
like
it's
Sulfur, Gary Numan at this point sounded like this.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like everything that is on the it was the Vampire Fight.
Oh, the
Queen of the Damned soundtrack.
Shit, yes,
it sounds like
Queen of the
everything
Damned
on that.
Yes.
Everything.
That's a little bit more new metal, isn't it?
A little,
but,
I think, but it still had that kind of noise.
Sort of industrial guitar pop.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, there's Broke, there's a big interview with them in the magazine, and Rock Sound are absolutely convinced that they're the next big thing. They weren't.
No.
No, I couldn't find any information about them. Every time, if I put in like Stroke and Momentary, all it would do is help me to diagnose a stroke.
Yes.
I don't know who they are or where they came from.
They're from Manchester.
Vanished.
But yeah, it's such a generic name as well that there's probably been a million other. I mean, wasn't there a band called Stroke 9? So perhaps they were Stroke 1 and there were another 8 in between. There's probably been
The Strokes.
Yes, of course.
I mean, these are better than The Strokes.
Not as successful, though.
No,
but
Success
I do
talent
like
are not necessarily related, are they?
No.
Unfortunately.
Not at all. Should we go for the next track?
Yeah.
Getting a sense of deja vu on this one.
Yeah, we've already been angry about this before, haven't we? I have, definitely.
Well, I wasn't angry, but yeah, this is Kitty and Get Off, You Can Eat a Dick, which we talked about in episode 3.
One thing that I don't think I highlighted last time is the really fucking shit tempo shift.
Yes.
Which is the absolute fucking telltale of, Oh, I see. You're under 18, right? Because every single band that gets famous before they're 18 will have something and be like, oh, let's go faster.
Now it goes faster. Now it goes faster.
Yeah.
Ah!
And it sounds shit. Always.
But yeah, I think basically, because we've already talked about this one, it's over to Jade for this one.
So I think I was probably, I don't know, maybe I was too old for Kitty, but I certainly felt like I was maybe Kitty's like target market, a little bit metal, a little bit alternative. Yeah, Hated them. Absolutely could not be doing with Kitty at all. It just all sounded a little bit forced, a little bit crap, a little bit like they heard a Pantera album and went, oh my God, we could do this too. I hate it. I hate it so much. I don't think I've ever heard... I think this is probably the first time I've tolerated listening to a Kitty song all the way through. It just was not for me at all.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me like Jack Off Jill, but they're like, but I bet we can be heavier.
Okay.
With not as good songs.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it did seem like they were popular because they were young and they were ladies and looked a little bit different.
This is what I thought last time.
Yeah.
They'd have got nowhere. If they were three guys, they'd have got absolutely nowhere with those songs.
I bet there were three guys that had songs like that.
Yeah.
I think we've played gigs with them.
Yeah. We have.
Almost certainly.
Everyone in a band at any point in time has played a gig with a band that sounded like that.
Let's go for the next lot, next track.
Or been in a band that sounded like
Yes,
that.
We've probably guilty of that too.
Not me, man. My bands have always been great.
This is Muse, as we discussed them earlier, Agitated, which was the B-side to their Uno single.
You can kind of see, like, if this was the first Muse track you'd heard, you'd be like, I'm not really... There were no hints or previews of what was to come.
Well, there were... This was obviously a B-side.
Yeah,
because it was shit. It deserves B-side status. They were putting out songs around that time that were... really good.
That whole album. So I was quite, as I said earlier, kind of, I went to see them and I've generally been quite disappointed by them, but we really liked them. We had a friend who had her dad was amazing. He'd take us to all these gigs. This is why I kind of saw this. I saw just some incredible people. We saw Radiohead around the same time in the Big Blue Tent tour, just as Kid A came out. He took us to all these incredible gigs. So
I missed that too.
That's why I've seen like three people on this CD, just because of Sally's amazing dad. Thank you very much, Neil. But we did really like them. Like, on CD, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And I think when you hear this track in amongst all the others, you can see why Muse are still very successful in comparison to those other... It's just so much tighter and so much better than most of the stuff that's on here, I would say. But always my opinion of Muse is that it was a subpar Radiohead. And I still very much feel that way.
This is it. They started out... as Radiohead copyists. I really like the first Muse album.
It's great.
I really like some of the second one, and then I totally go off them after that. They change from being Radiohead copyists to Queen copyists later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they're definitely... it's the thousands of overdub harmony sort of thing.
Yeah, see, I quite enjoyed the Radiohead with big fucking huge guitars thing. I'm all right with that, but the Queen thing, I'm not. No. I'm not down with, really.
But then Radiohead had fucking huge guitars a lot of the time on OK Computer and
But they're not like this kind of huge. These are like heavy
stuff,
huge,
like
not
Just.
Fucking noisy huge.
Just has got some pretty heavy guitar sounds on it, on the bends.
I'd say, some of Radiohead's stuff is quite... Yeah, there's some big stuff on there. But I think, I don't know, my personal theory about the popularity of Muse is that they kind of rose... Radiohead then went electronic and brought Kid A in, and so it kind of disappointed all those heavy old school guitar fans, but then Muse came in with this kind of very similar sound that
this
completely crossed that over. This is all the time when I've seen these bands, and we went to see the Blue Tent off Radiohead, and it was the day that Kid A had come out, so no one had heard it, and everyone just went What is this? And they did play a little bit of the old stuff, and most of it was Kid
Where
A.
Where was that?
That was in Warrington.
Right, yeah.
And it was just really disappointing for us, because we were so used to all that kind of heavy guitar stuff. Now I go back and I'm like, Kid A is brilliant. I love it. But as kind of an 18-year-old girl who was super into the world and like a new sad Radiohead stuff, I was super disappointed and upset by it.
I loved Kid A.
See, this is it. And now I go back and I'm like, I was an idiot. I totally get it.
I had it on pre-order from What Records in Nuneaton, and then turned up on the day to buy it, and they'd got a promo copy, and I swapped my proper copy for a promo.
So we did hear it. We had it on in the car on the way down, because Neil had had it delivered, because he was on these cool, like, it was in the very early days of buying stuff on the internet and whatever, and he'd had it delivered that morning. Come through the post, so we listened to it on the way down. Yeah, this is great. But that is my theory as to why Muse are so popular, because they filled a gap that Radiohead left.
I think that's an incredibly valid theory. Absolutely. Because it's carrying on the guitar he Radiohead at the exact point, and I never thought of it that way.
And it's like when Biggie and Tupac died and Jay-Z came in, I don't think Jay-Z would be a popular. I think it's that similar gap filling. You need people to come in and fill those gaps where people go.
Fill the vacuum.
Yeah.
Cool. Right, let's go for the next track. So this, at the time, was Keith Caputo with Honeycomb. She's now known as Mina Caputo.
Yeah.
She's the vocalist of Life of Agony, who I absolutely loved. 97, they released their Soul Searching Sun album. He'd left the band by this point, and this was his solo album. Her solo album. And it sounds pretty much like Soul Searching Sun, which was a lot more song-based than their more hardcore sound, but it's got more sort of like less distorted guitars, basically. The guitars are more rock, less metal.
Yeah, basically, it was just, I guess maybe Soul Searching Sun was more her album than the rest of the band's.
I think that might have been what led to her then leaving the band, because
their new stuff sounds a lot like River Runs Red.
I've not heard any of their recent stuff, because she's back in the band now.
Yeah. She's been back for ages.
Yeah. Because they had Whitfield Crane replaced her when she first left from Ugly Kid Joe.
Dude's got a really good voice as well. Like, I heard him do a set with them, and I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. I've heard him with both vocalists.
But if you just change the guitar tone on that song could have fitted quite well on Soul Searching.
Yeah, for sure.
But it wouldn't have been... It's not as good as Tangerine or any of the tracks like that.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about this, really. I'm not overly familiar with either Mina Caputo or previous band, Life of Agony. This song's all right, isn't it?
I had a sort of weird way of getting into Life of Agony. I got randomly sent a promo cassette in the post.
Yeah.
Which I think was because I was on the mailing list for various other bands.
Yeah.
So I think they just looked at people that were on the mailing list and sent them out.
They might like that, yeah.
Which is really cool.
So, I had heard something fairly recently by Life of Agony with Mina singing. And I think it must have come up on, like, I watched quite a lot of, like, YouTube videos, and it had just been one of those ones that I tricked over from. I'd probably been watching some other festival stuff, and it had come over. But I enjoy it, it's all right. Yeah. And this is a...
They're one of the bands that I want to see if I go to Bloodstock this year, because I've never seen them live, and I've loved them for some of their albums for 23 years. I've obviously not loved them enough to particularly continue buying their later stuff, but
I love doing that. I managed to tick two bands off last year. It was so good. I ticked off Skunk Anansie and Skindred. Just my best gig year last year, and through going to festivals as well. So brilliant.
Excellent. Let's go for the next track.
Okay.
Polly, pretty Polly, can go away with me.
So this is Queen Adrina and Pretty Polly.
Yes.
Can I just jump in here?
Yes.
Is it Queen Adrina all one word?
Depends on the album.
Okay, because I know, yeah, because I kind of knew it as all one word, but then noticed that on the CD case it has it as two separate words.
Yes, so...
We've done this. We have.
Oh, sorry. Feel free to...
No, no, it's an interesting point and not everybody would have listened to it. Me and Ian's other podcast, We Dig Music, we did an episode about Queen Adrina.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we started making the playlist for us all to listen to it, we could only find certain albums on Spotify. And right. And after we'd been listening for a couple of weeks, I realised that that's because some of them were Queen Adrina as one word and some were Queen Adrina.
Right.
So, yeah, the first album, which this was off, it was two separate words.
Okay.
Which was when I was really big into them. We saw them on my 18th birthday in January 2000.
Oh.
And then me and Ian supported them at Rugeley Red Rose Theatre, the same venue, a few months later.
Nice.
And it was great. So for anyone that's not aware, Queen Adrina was the band formed by Katie Jane Garside and Crispin Gray, who were originally in Daisy Chainsaw, who were also brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah, that gig, it was... We were really late sound checking because...
The chair.
Yes.
The chair.
Katie, she had a chair that she has on stage.
She has a wooden chair that she always has on stage. And
I think I knew about it.
It got left at Wolverhampton Little Civic where they'd played the night before and we were in Rugeley and she refused to sound check until somebody had driven back to Wolverhampton and brought it back.
Diva behaviour. Led me to think that she was a bit of a twat.
Yeah, still a twat.
Also the bass player. Bit of a twat.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know. This whole song makes me think there might be a bit of a twat, to be honest.
I kind of like the little girl lost vocals when Julie Christmas does it.
Yeah, no, I love Julie Christmas. You got me into Julie Christmas, actually, Ian. But this, I just find really insipid.
I'm like a Julie Christmas dealer. I'm like,
you are.
You like female vocalists? Listen to Julie Christmas.
Yeah, it's true.
This song's it's a really old murder ballad.
Mm.
Originally, it's 350 years old, the song is, at least.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's been covered by loads of different people, like Bob Dylan, The Byrds, Pete Seeger, Gilbert O'Sullivan, and celebrity sex offender Kevin Spacey. But yeah, it was never my favourite of their songs on that album, but I still kind of dug it.
They did a really good version of Jolene. I remember
that.
Yeah,
their version of Jolene is great.
I think it's my definitive version of Jolene, actually.
I'd go with that. But I preferred their own stuff like Cold Fish and Heavenly Surrender and stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think this vocal style in general is not something that I'm super into. It just doesn't feel like there's a lot of... It's too soft. There never feels like there's a lot of emotion in it. It's all just a bit wishy-washy. But I think that's probably because my preferred female vocalists are people like Skin from Skunk and Nancy, who have so much emotion and so much power.
It's a much bigger voice.
Yeah, that's it. It's just a different thing. But this never really catches my attention in the same way.
That's fair. It's definitely Marmitey.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So let's go for the next track.
Yeah.
This is Psycho and The Zoo.
This is a remix, though, right?
It is. An Apathy All-Star Percutation, which is only available on this CD. It's an exclusive.
It's a banger, right?
It's great. It's so much fun. I think all of us were having a little, dance.
Yeah. There was a lot of chair dancing going on.
Yeah, there was.
And then when that chorus comes in... have you ever heard anyone sound so serious about wanting to go to the zoo?
Well, see, this is the remix. Have you heard the actual original track?
No.
Because this misses loads of the lyrics out. The song is about somebody who is allergic to fur.
Right.
But goes to the zoo anyway and dies.
Wow.
Oh.
So, I think it's better that they've left that bit out. The original track, because I know, I think it's probably because I know the remix better.
Yeah.
It's slower, and it just seems to really drag. But this is the second instance we've had in an episode of Psycore having a song on a CD.
Not an actual Psycore song.
That's totally not representative of what the album sounds like.
Yeah, we need to do that CD that's got Chocolate Milkshake on it. Because that's a fucking...
Because that is the actual
absolute
album
banger.
I'd be really upset if I listened to a Psycore thing and it didn't sound like that. I'd be like, oh, I'm just having so much fun. This
you
is
say
rubbish.
That, but have you heard Chocolate Milkshake?
I don't think I have, no.
It's a song about having an incredibly bad hangover and needing chocolate milkshake.
Oh, he wants ginger beer, not chocolate milkshake.
But like, in his really earnest voice, he's like, help me, I suffer. Give me chocolate milkshake.
They're Scandinavian, aren't they?
They are.
Swedish,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'd love it if Twycross Zoo used that for a TV advert.
Yes,
maybe we need to send it to them.
Just put it up on YouTube and just use it.
Be like, email him. Be like, dude, do you want to come and do a promo video for a zoo?
Yeah, they'd like, love it.
We'll use Twycross. This remix, and it will be you just looking really serious at a zoo
with like lemurs behind you.
Yeah,
just like dancing about.
He's just like looking ominous as fuck with his triple pointed goatee beard.
Ah, let's go for the next track.
To be the DJ. Everybody thinks it's oh so easy.
Now this is Soul Wax and Too Many DJs.
Yeah.
Early Soul Wax before they were Too Many DJs.
Indeed.
intro is totally ripped off from Eternal Life by Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
But it's good, I like it.
Yeah, it's alright.
I've always dug Soul Wax. They changed a hell of a lot after their first album.
Yeah.
They got so much more dance-based and electronic, which I think, ironically, this is sort of a protest song about DJ culture.
Yeah.
Now they're one of the...
And then they became it. Like one of the... I can't even remember which one it is now. It's the cover of their album where they've had to tip X out. I think it was Elton John. That is one of the our favourites in our house.
That is, Radio Soul Wax Part 1, is it?
Who?
Part 2. Yes, because the first one was just a bootleg.
Yeah, and it's just brilliant.
It's got loads of mashups.
We listen to
it
all the time.
It.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of my favourites. But this is... So Soul Wax are the second band on this CD that I saw. They were supporting... Again, it was at the Charlotte. They were supporting a band called Sunner, who kind of appeared very briefly and then vanished.
Oh, yeah, that one song that they had was fucking great.
I had their album.
This is it. We had their album. We're big Sunner fans, so we went to see Sunner, and then Soul Wax were playing before. But to be honest, Soul Wax absolutely blew us away. They were absolutely brilliant, and it would have been around this time, I presume, because it's when we were going to a lot of gigs.
Well, Sunner was great gig. Their album was out later that summer because I got given a promo postcard thing for it at the last weekend that Nine Inch Nails were supposed to play and pulled out of, which was
what was the name of that single that they had?
I cannot remember.
Me neither.
I can't remember.
I can see the album cover in my head, but
I had stickers of them on on VHS, because I think, I don't know if it came with the album. I definitely had the album, or whether we got the stickers at the gig or something. I don't know, but they were very much on my VHS. It was a big and then they vanished. They just disappeared into nothing. But Soul Wax carried on, and I don't know, became something that I probably enjoyed even more, which is unusual because I'm not a very dance music-y sort of person. But
They make it more accessible for people that aren't as much into dance music.
Though. Yeah, yeah.
They're messing with genres all the time. There's a Kylie Minogue mashup that they did with Coyotes, which is fucking ace. They were very... I mean, I was quite into mashups, and they were sort of the most successful people.
Yeah, yeah. I love a mashup.
You really were, weren't you?
I still am.
Oh yeah, I love a really good mashup. Okay, especially when you're not, if you don't know and you're not sure of the tracks, and then all of a sudden you pull it out and you're like, oh, actually, that's genius. I love that.
Really fun to play when you're DJing as well.
Yeah
true.
We've got a great we've got an album called I think it's called Chop the Fuck Up, which is
excellent.
Like a hip hop stuff, and one of my favourite ones of that is Missy Elliott, Get Your Freak On with The Cure. And it just goes so well.
Do you know which Cure track?
I can't remember off the top of my head which one it is. I'll find it out for you.
I need to hear that.
But it's great. It's a great track. And if you know Get Your Freak On, it speeds it up ever so slightly. So if you want to learn the words, learn it to that, because then when the regular Missy Elliott version comes on, you know all the words and it's dead easy because it's too slow. That's the way to learn the tracks.
Say top tips.
Yeah.
Nice.
Let's go for the next song.
Some kind of cool prodigy-esque thing from all that dialogue at the start, and then this happened.
Yeah.
This is
pretty fucking bummed about that.
Seafood and a song called Belt.
It sounds like something off like a Dawson's Creek soundtrack.
It really does.
Like, you know, when you just like they're wandering up, like they've had a bit of a breakup or an argument, and one's got in the car and they're having a bit of a cry, and that's playing in the background. As soon as I hear this, I just think, oh, it sounds like American drama
fucking
soundtrack.
Nasal, abrasive bullshit vocals.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
There's some nice like bass playing on it, but other than that,
For a second, I thought I was going to have to listen to another Sisu track, which gave me a horrible flashback to that.
No, this was 20 years earlier than Sisu.
Still shit, but...
Really? It is terrible.
Is there
it's
a band
so
with
boring.
C in their name that aren't shit?
You've put me on the spot now.
Yeah, and I want to know the truth.
Devin Townsend's Ocean Machine.
No.
Our friend's brother is in a band called Seas of Mirth, who are... amazing.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely amazing. Heartily recommend them. They play in Leicester a lot.
Our friend Grace, who used to be in my band, used to be in Seas of Mirth.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Their recording.
And they often have a tug of war at their gigs.
Nice.
Again, heartily recommend it. If you've not had an exercise for a couple
pirates.
Of weeks, it's exhausting. They are pirates. They were kind of, I can't remember what they were before, but they've just moved into like funk pirate.
Interesting.
It's incredible.
See, I'm enjoying the fact that we're just completely fucking ignoring these chodes and talking about a different band.
Well, I do. There is one fact I want to point out about Seafood, because it's completely fucking just stupid.
Okay.
So their band name is Seafood, which is a really generic word.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they got their band name, it's from the name of a yacht in Caddyshack. No, you didn't. It's a fucking generic word. You can't just make up a backstory about your band's called Seafood. Fuck
off. Because you saw Caddyshack and you think it's cool to say that.
That might make us slightly more interesting. No, you've called your band Seafood. You're a bunch of prawns.
Didn't work, did it?
You can tell
fucking
that all this
prawns.
You can tell that all this is like pre-internet, because you can't have a generic name like that anymore.
No.
You have to... It's like churches have to have their little V to make them searchable. Yeah, this is it. Because... For like search engine optimization, you just can't. You can't have a generic Seafood name.
It's
rubbish.
That's why Linkin Park is spelt
the way that
it is.
Because they knew they could see that coming. So clearly, Seafood's management and record company needed a kick up the bum because they weren't ahead enough.
And
I would say
how you know that A were formed before all of that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it.
Maybe Seafood's management knew what the fuck they were dealing with.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like,
maybe they were just like...
Just let them sink.
Let
just
it die.
Bury it
back into the sea.
Yeah.
Yes. Plankton. Let's go for the next song. This is Meat Hook Seed and their song Beautiful.
Yes.
So Meat Hook Seed was a side project of Mitch Harris and Shane Embry from Napalm Death, with the singer of the French metal band Out.
Oh, I vaguely remember it as being quite good.
I think they were a bit sort of new metal, weren't they?
Yeah, for sure.
That's the only thing I remember about them.
It seems like you can be in Napalm Death and then do a side project and it will be fucking cool. Basically, like, I can't think of a Napalm Death related project that I don't quite like.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously,
generally
Godflesh.
More than Napalm Death, in fairness. Like, I don't mind Napalm Death. But if you were going to, like, say, would you like to listen to Napalm Death or Godflesh? Well, Godflesh. Napalm Death or Scorn? Scorn. Napalm Death or Cathedral? Cathedral.
Depends on the track, because Meat Hook Seas never really grabbed me. I'd rather put Breed to Breathe on or something like that on.
Kind of, yeah. Like, similar in pacing and guitar toned at that point, which is...
But a better song, I think.
Yeah.
This has always seemed a little bit, like, messy to me.
I quite like it.
It's okay. It's fine. Like, I wouldn't want to turn it off or anything, but... Like, it just doesn't do a huge amount for me, really.
It's super late 90s. Like, oh, yeah. Let's get some drum loops. Let's fucking...
It sounds like a lot of other stuff, I think. Yeah, nothing. You could listen to any album.
Yeah, like, I probably DJed with all of the bands that sounded like this at that point in time. What are you playing, Ian? I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
He's got a cool drum loop and a fucking guitar riff. Whatever.
Let's go for the next song. This is Super Suckers and Hot Like the Sun.
Genuinely surprised that this is the first time we've hit a song that sounds like this, considering the time that the CD was released.
Yes. But they're not Swedish, even though it's very Swedish sounding.
Yeah,
rock.
Yeah, like, this is full of, like, Helicopters, Backyard Babies, etc.
Actually from Seattle.
I know. They've been going for ages as well, haven't they?
Late 80s, I think they formed.
Yeah.
That is very telling, I think. Yeah. It sounds a little bit like we used to play with Guns N' Roses.
Yeah. Well, Duff's from Seattle, they possibly know him.
Yeah, maybe. And I just, when I reheard this recently, I was just like, oh gosh, this is like, it's almost kind of Steel Panther-y. The lyrics are so awful.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll do anything you want because you're hotter than the sun. It's so cringy. I was physically recoiling back into my seat, just like, oh, this is horrible. It's kind of, yeah, like 90s, like LA scene, Whiskey a Go Go sort of cringe fest for
me.
It's definitely, I kind of enjoy it.
Coming from that rather than the, like, fun bullshit that was the Swedish scene.
I
really like the first 2 minutes, but then it goes into the slower bit.
This is it again.
If it was just a 2 minute punk blast,
absolutely.
But if it was, it would have been Zeke, not Super Suckers.
Well, they're not a million miles away. The title track on this album was a track called The Evil Powers of Rock and Roll, which was on, I think it was on a Kerrang CD.
Yeah,
and that's fucking great. But that is, it's not far off Zeke at all.
Yeah.
In fact, it may even have been on the same CD as Let's Get Drugs or something like that by Zeke.
Oh, but there's nothing as feral as Let's Get Drugs. That song is so fucking feral.
Yeah. It's fern.
Yep.
Let's go for the final track on the CD.
Okay.
Now, this is Slipknot and Scissors.
Yes. This was one of those bits on the album where you're like, oh, they are more than just a really fucking noisy as hell metal band.
They are, but it's really not very representative of the album.
No.
But there's probably a reason for that.
Because Roxanne spent all their money on Filter.
No. by this point that this CD came out, so the Slipknot album has got 13 tracks on it.
And all of them had been on cover mate CDs or singles at
this
that point.
This was the 8th song. So 8 out of 13 songs. No, it'd be 14 songs if you included the intro.
Yeah.
So there were only like 5 songs left on the album that they could have put on anywhere. And I think Slipknot were probably like, well, we're going to hold some of these ones back. You can have Scissors.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Slipknot wouldn't really have got anything out of this. Roxanne would have got so much more by having another Slipknot song that hadn't been on another free CD on the CD than Slipknot would have got out of it. They were already massive. They'd already been in the top 40 album chart.
Yep.
They were voted the best international newcomer in the magazine. The album had been out for 8 months.
And if you went into it and this was your first listening,
you're not going
to
buy it off that, are you?
No,
and it's odd that kind of that they have put it on 8 months after the album's been out, because I wasn't a massive Slipknot fan. I didn't really buy into the masks and stuff. I thought it was a bit like, and I didn't mind the songs, but I just didn't buy into the whole image thing of it. I thought it was a bit much.
Yeah.
But even I'd heard the album. Yeah. So I'd picked this up knowing what that song sounded like. It wasn't my first introduction to it. I just find it really odd that they put this on. It's not going to be the song that sells the magazine, is it?
Like, I think it must be the one
really
that sells
it.
I think it would be to sell the magazine, because it's not going to be there to sell the album. Because everybody that was likely to buy it had already got it.
Yeah, that's it. It's a really odd choice, I think, on this CD and for when it came out. It's it's interesting that.
It's bizarre. But, I mean, it's not bad, but it's a bit of a filler track.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very much an album track, isn't it?
Although I think they played like either this or one of the weirder ones at Wolverhampton.
Yes,
they set everything on fire.
They did. I think they ended the set with Scissors.
Whilst it is an album track and a weird one, they also played it live.
Maybe that's why they set everything on fire.
Well, it's the final track on the album, not including the secret track and the bonus tracks.
Yeah.
So they wanted it's what they end things with.
And it is like pretty fucking apocalyptic at the end of it, isn't it?
Like the Wolverhampton Civic.
Yes.
we'll end it. We'll just
use proper fucking lighter fluid and gas the entire crowd.
On this wooden stage with wooden panelled walls.
Yeah.
While the DJ jumps on somebody from the balcony and puts her in hospital. But it was apparently the greatest day of her life.
Yep.
As reported at the time.
Really happy for her. I remember not going. I think quite a few people that I knew were super into Slipknot when this but I didn't go to the tour because I'm just not massively impressed with having bodily fluid stripped at me, which was a lot of what the rumours were. Was that he went and people
were
sick, and I was just I'm just not into that. I'm not into that now. I should also
point
out. Just we're not.
I've developed a taste for it later on.
Later on, it was a thing. And I've seen them twice, but both at Download, actually.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed it, but I don't feel like I massively missed out by not being at the Wolverhampton gig, I think.
I've seen them since a couple of times, and they've been better than that.
Yeah, I think
because,
that's
because, with the budget and stuff.
Yeah. I think at this point, they're still very much finding their feet, aren't they? They're still working out who they are and what they're doing. Whereas by the time I probably got around to seeing them, they were pretty solid.
Yeah, we didn't have to sit down or anything. we were allowed to stand up, do what the fuck we wanted for the whole
sit
gig.
Sit the fuck down!
Yeah. Although now I love to sit down at a gig.
Then they make you jump up again.
That's true, but it's great for the thighs. We have to remember. So, after a whole day of drinking nothing but, Carlsberg, as I think it now is at Download, all you need to do is, one moment of jump, and then you're fine, because you've probably burnt off all those calories just by squatting.
Yeah, totes.
I think so.
Cool. Have you seen backstage footage from that Muse DVD?
I haven't, but you've told me about it.
Like the bass player with Corey Taylor's mask on, screaming sit the fuck down to everyone on the back of the tour bus.
Nice.
It's just like Matt Bellamy, the other one, okay.
What are you doing?
I once managed to bag backstage passes to Download Festival. and saw the guy with a really long nose
lifting
up the bottom of his mask to eat a Ribena ice lolly.
That's a great story. See, I hate the masks, I must say. Like, I just don't get it. But I'm generally terrified of things like puppets and clowns. So just their whole mask thing totally turns me off. I prefer them now they're kind of metallic and don't look like they've been battered out of actual old dead pigs.
Yeah, that's fair.
But totally I'm still not super into it, I'll be honest.
That's fair.
I'd rather they just talk. I think we all know what they look like now.
You prefer stone sour?
No, I do not. That's a different.
Does anyone?
No.
Hopefully not.
Not but even Corey Taylor's mom.
No.
No.
Hopefully not even Corey Taylor. But
yeah, you definitely hope.
Well, I don't think Jim Root does anymore.
Is he not in him anymore?
I don't think he is.
Right. I wouldn't be either. They're just boring. Yeah. So that's the end of the CD, and therefore the end of the podcast.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Jade.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been great fun.
We will definitely get you back, because that was ace. So if people want to like follow you on Twitter and Ting, what's your Twitter thingy?
It is Auntie, that's AUNTY, _ Jade, JAYDE. Apologies, not my fault. I didn't pick my own name. And that's it. Auntie _ Jade.
Okay. So, yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye. Bye.